How good does it get, SK?
Why not us, Troy?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's the Smiley Show. So long, everybody.
This is the Smiley Show.
Welcome back to the first major championship installment of the Smiley Show in 2026. We are here in Augusta, Georgia, Smiley. The temperatures are warming up, playing golf in shorts again. We got Jackson behind the camera. Brian joined us later in the week. And I got a big roll of toilet paper because the tradition, unlike any other, holds true. The pollen in Augusta gets me every single year. I think I blow my nose 75 times this morning. So we're back. We're all the way back.
You sound great, man.
Hey, I'm not going to think about it at all during the show. I promise.
You sound great. But you know what also looks great? You got a good lid on, man. Got a good lid.
Notice anything different about us? How about the new, the Smiley Show hats? First of all, thanks to our good friends at Imperial for doing this sort of limited run. And stay tuned, because you will be able to acquire these in some way, shape, or form in the very near future via Imperial. But this is the first run where we've got the little tan, I think it's the DNA 001 with the TSS logo.
I don't know why you're looking at me. I don't know.
Well, by the way, though, how about this? We have the fresh debut of a new alt logo for the show.
Yeah, I'm proud of it, man.
Talk about this one, buddy. This is your creation.
Yeah, so pretty simple. I'm a simple guy, I think. I don't like overcomplicated logos. This is pretty easy to understand. Obviously, golf ball with a T. Play on words, though, would be just a little smiley face in the golf ball. I like it. I think this plays anywhere. Kids, moms, dads, golf dads specifically. Hey, a little smiley show in the back, just so if anybody asks where it's from. So
I'll tell you what, it played on Saturday at Hope Valley for both the round of golf and the Easter egg hunt after.
And
how about that?
Question, any compliments?
Lots of people.
Wow.
Loving the lids.
Wow.
We're coming out strong. So just stay tuned for that. Thanks to the good people at Imperial. They've been a great partner to us. And there's another good partner that, as we're kind of transitioning, we have to clean up some stuff at the Valero Texas Open. So I'd like permission, Smiley, to put on my Valero Texas Open recap hat, which in this instance, it's going to be a little Srixon lid. Because JJ Spahn gets it done. You were there calling all the golf. And here was my big takeaway, is that I got to give a shout out to my guys, Tony and Mike at Srixon and Sean over at Traeburn, because I built the JJ Spahn combo set just days ago.
About it.
Got the 4-iron, 5-iron, and the ZXI-5 at the top of the bag, and then 7s all the way down. The first 4-iron I hit of the 5s, I was like, oh, I almost whiffed that. And they were like, 218 carry. Like, that's going to work. We can make that work.
They just shoot straight up. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Good for you.
Shout out to them, but shout out to JJ Spahn to just kind of roll this into Masters Week. I mean, this is something that JJ needed in a huge way. 8 starts this season. 4 missed cuts, no top 20s until the win this week in San Antonio. And I thought it was interesting hearing him talk about it on the range after the win. He was warming up, of course, in the case that he would go to a playoff with Bobby Mack. And just talking about the pressure that he placed on himself this year in terms of expectations following the U.S. Open win at Oakmont last year, and just not feeling free and just trying to get back into that free mindset. And golly, I mean, talking about Oakmont, like the tee shot at 17, amazing tee shots at 16, 17 to go 2-2 and get it done. I mean, just, you know, reacting to that win, cool to see a Srixon guy in the winner's circle, but just what it means for JJ and his trajectory this year after a start that he probably didn't see happening.
It was not a great start to the year for JJ. I think he'll tell you that. I think it was pretty obvious that with his expectations coming to the year, I think we all felt like he was a player that could probably keep it going just with his ball striking. Coming into the year, I was pretty high on him as well. I felt like his short game was really improving, especially around the greens. That had been an area in which he had, you know, been just average to below average, never was great. But I noticed some really great stuff at the Hero coming into the year. So I was thinking, like, man, he's about to pop off, right?
Yeah.
But it's similar to guys at the beginning of the year at the West Coast, whether it be the Poana greens or getting sick. JJ Spahn, his home week in Phoenix, gets vertigo. And, you know, he's on the back of the range. He's like, I can't play. It's like, these are things that you obviously can't control. So for JJ, I would say that at the Players' Championship talking to his team, that was the week in which they started to find something in his game, and it was mainly his ball striking. He was humping the ball a little bit, just wasn't getting quite into that left hip, turning and rotating through it. They made that adjustment, starting to see the fades come back a little bit. Played I'd say, fairly well at Players, and then just kind of kept building and building into, of course, this week, where I would say the weekend – the scores that he shot, especially yesterday, I think he was 9-under in his 27 holes that he played in some really, really challenging conditions, soft greens, north wind, a golf course that felt somewhat gettable because of the softness, but still there were so many back pins that made it very, very difficult to control your spin and your golf ball. But again, I think I would say this to JJ is that, you know, 2 years ago when he decided to take San Antonio off, I was like, what are you doing, dude? Like, you play so well in San Antonio. Why are you playing in Houston where it only helps to just smash the golf ball? He's like, I don't know what I was doing. This was at actually the Strixon shoot I was talking about.
Oh, and I was like, Florida earlier this year.
I was like,
yeah.
Good to have you back in San Antonio. Can't wait for you to get your second title, and here we are.
So good. Here we are. Yeah, big win for Team Strixon. Congrats to JJ. And I very much look forward to doing my best JJ Spawn impersonation when my ZXF5-7 combo set comes in. So with that, we're going to turn the page officially to Masters Week. We got a lot to break down here. We've got some cool stats and trying to profile the eventual winner. We're going to look at the top of the odds board. If you want a course preview, a strategy preview, please go watch the first nine, second nine, the conversation that Smiley had with Bones. I was off camera running the little yardage book, you know, overview. We're kind of looking at hole locations. It is, I've rewatched that like two or three times now. That and like the Rory Amazon doc, I've just been having those on loop to get ready for the week.
All right, sell me this pin on the doc. I haven't had any time to watch anything with the kids last week in San Antonio. So out of 10, give me just a quick,
quick
Rotten Tomatoes review.
I've only made it through half of it because...
Well, like, you just said you watch it three or four times.
Here's what happens every time. I had the kids. I was with my mom in Palm Beach, and I had like it on, and I'm trying to start it, and then it's like, hey, I want yogurt with granola. Hey, go get me a snack. And then I miss the part, so then it's like, all right, this is the time where I'm going to start it and watch from the beginning. Rinse, repeat. But I thought...
the beginning just... Get you
the
going.
Beginning hits every time. Well, you know what? It's the thing I found most interesting about the beginning was, you know, one of the early themes is what 2011 did to his psyche and the way he like still carries that with himself, you know, subconsciously around this place of just that huge collapse, the tee shot on 10, and just how long it took for him to recover from that and get over that. Even though he went to, you know, immediately wins the U.S. Open for his first major shortly after that. Just the way he carries himself at Augusta National, how long it took him to kind of get over changing prep, changing routines, just, you know, living his mind subconsciously. So I thought that was cool. The back and forth with Bryson, there's a lot of good in there. But in terms of, you know, the stuff on our show, I flip between that and the Bone stuff. And I just think that if you were trying to understand how we had some comments that I thought were great, where they're like, the players should be watching this. Like, just you and Bones going back and forth about this is what we like to do on three to this whole location. This is what we do a little bit different if it's a different one. That's your best way to understand how to play Augusta National is watching those two videos.
Man, on the charter over here from the Valero Texas Open, filled with many players and many of the caddies that are competing this week, and a couple of different times I'd go to the back of the plane to use a restroom or just go talk to somebody. And every single time I'd go by, there'd either be a player watching old or player or caddy watching old Masters highlights to try to pick up something from hole locations, or caddies just studying their books, man. It just felt like, you know, these are guys that are trying to mentally get ready for a place that is to a degree that we don't ever get to experience, that there's a wealth of information that you're just trying to absorb the best you can. And you either have a caddy that can get you around this place or you can't. And I say that with all due respect to how difficult that job is. But this week in particular, there are angles that you never have to experience any other week. It's not the PGA Tour marking this place. You don't have elevation marked in your yardage book, which is not normal at all. You normally have all your plus minuses. This place is up and down the whole way around. So there is so much that you can learn from this place. And it wasn't surprising to see these guys just grinding last night.
I thought that was another interesting part of your conversation with Bones, of you guys having two different reads on elevation change on the approach at two, if you're going for it in two, you know, stuff like that, where it's just, you have to just experience is what lends you the knowledge that you can apply to helping the player out.
Because you're just even talking about like how different a shot into 18 to the front versus the back pin played, as far as just the elevation that you would
so
play.
Interesting.
There's a feel element to it that I think is just so cool.
Yeah, I saw something, and this was a, I believe it was a golf.com conversation, but an excerpt of, they sat down with Ted Scott and he was talking about this sort of like weather phenomenon that happens at 12 in Rays Creek, where like the wind can swirl and have an amplifying effect so that like 5 miles an hour actually plays like 15, depending on the, and then everyone has a different read on, oh, you got to wait till the flags on 11 and 12 match. Bones doesn't necessarily subscribe to that feeling. You know, a lot of guys are waiting for a certain exact wind. It's just, this week is,
don't ice me out, man. I'm ready to hit my shot.
I don't know if
I would like you as a caddy.
Oh, do you not remember our Spyglass Hill video?
I don't think it would go well. And I do love good content. If I were to play in some type of golf tournament, and of course
it'd be entertaining.
You'd be the first guy to get the job, but I don't know if you would make the weekend. Well, I don't know if I would make the weekend either. But
it'd be some combination of wherever the state of your golf game is, with my inability to do math and or give a concise answer in 40 seconds. That would it doesn't set us up for
Charlie
success.
Just wants airtime. He just wants airtime.
I'm just here to talk. Yeah, while you're digging through the archives, go to like the eighth hole on Spyglass and see the numbers that I gave Smiley for his approach shot with the wedge. Not my best work. So here's the weather report, the official Augusta National weather report for the week, Smiley. I'm going to read you the synopsis. Synopsis of starts, the relative humidity values will drop to around 25% to 35% each afternoon through Wednesday, leading to very dry conditions.
Wait, you said it's going to drop from 25 to 35%?
Yeah, it's going to start higher in the week. We're going to have more humidity. It's going to drop, so it's going to get really dry. Like your takeaway here is dry weather.
Jack, is that mathing? Wouldn't we go from 35 to 25 we're dropping?
I'm listening.
I'm reading verbatim off the sheet that I took right off the Media
me?
Hub this morning.
I get what you're saying.
It'll drop to around 25 to 35%. They're giving you an estimated range from wherever it's starting.
Oh, so you're not
like,
saying
let's call it,
going,
it's like,
you're not saying we're going from 25 to 35%. It's going
to be in that range.
Okay.
It's going to be in that range.
See, I think most people were just like, hold on.
First like live show to the season with the whole band back together. We got to get some reps in. Got to knock off a little bit of rust. Again, not a math guy, not a percentages guy. So we're doing the best we can. So dry weather all week. Breezy northeasterly to east northeasterly winds forecast through Thursday. Temperatures will gradually warm for the second half of the week and will reach the low to mid 80s. So Thursday, you have a cool start. Partly cloudy, breezy, low of 48, so that's a little chilly to start, high 74, winds east-northeast 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 20, so that's the windiest day of the week.
Jax, while you're working back there, as he keeps going through this, do you mind looking up what east-northeast is on 11 and 12 at Augusta? Are you able to see that in our in our compass? Thank you.
Okay, all right, love that. And then Friday, mostly sunny, warmer, low starts today, low 53, high 79, winds knocked down to 6 to 12 miles per hour coming out of the east. Then Saturday's mostly sunny, low 55, high 83, winds are northeast shifting to east 4 to 8 miles an hour.
It's a different wind.
And then Sunday, mostly sunny.
You don't ever get an east wind, man.
Well, like, and then there's really not a ton of wind at all, which I think is interesting the context of, and I'll finish with Sunday, mostly sunny, low 57, high 85, winds east shifting southeast 5 to 10 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Do you think on the wind piece, so just hearing that deal from Ted Scott, are there times when it's not windy, at least via the forecast or what you can feel, but that almost makes it trickier because there are certain holes like 12 where it plays tricks on your mind?
Well, I'm pretty certain that in this wind direction is that 11 and 12 will actually play downwind. So they're actually going to be like 9 irons, 8 irons into 11, which make that hole so much more scoreable. And 12 would be just wedges and gap wedges, pitching wedges, and 9 irons at most. I think when it comes the other way is when it comes out of the south, I think that's when it plays back in the breeze. You're hitting six and 5 irons into 11. But I think you're fully going to expect a Masters this year that's going to have firm greens, fast greens,
crispy. Cannot wait.
So I think there's going to be a high value on really having height into greens, apex height into greens, being able to control just your numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just playing in for guys who bomb it off the tee, who are good with their wedges and their short irons right now. That's the way I see it.
That's a profile that fits a number of people on the list that we're going to talk about. Although I do see that.
What you got for me,
Jackson? What's Jackson got?
The 12th hole at Augusta generally plays in a southeasterly direction.
Okay.
So does that mean the wind would be coming opposite?
Okay, hold on. Can you go look at the, you know, our compass thing? Hold on. I sent these pictures to Charlie. Get these real quick.
Okay, here we go. We're looking at the yardage book compasses.
Yeah, I want to look at the compass.
We'll do it live. We are doing it live.
Here we go. I got it.
Okay, he's got it.
So the 11th hole is going to play. All right, so what'd you say the wind was?
Which day? Because it's so Thursday, east northeast, Friday, east, Saturday, northeast shifting east, Sunday, east shifting southeast.
It's playing downwind at 11 and 12. Wow. So it's not going to play difficult on those holes. Where 13 is, you know, 13 is going to play a little bit more like in and off the right, but that doesn't really matter for guys.
Okay.
I think this golf course is going to play fairly, you know, you're going to need the firmness of the greens and the speeds of the greens to really challenge these players, which this golf course is plenty challenging when you talk about how precise you have to be with irons. But when you don't have these crazy winds and then, of course, some of the most important shots on this golf course kind of revolve. There's like five or six of them that you just got to be able to hit. Jack Nicklaus always talked about it. Like you got to hit, you know, the shot at the top of the hill at 15. Well, the second shot at 13, 11, 12. But if you get favorable winds in those, it's like, all right, that's, you know, it's going to be prime for maybe some pretty good scoring this week.
So you're kind of talking about some of the way those shots profile. We obviously know that in a week where there's not a lot of precipitation, that means that, less of a chance of organic matter. That would seem to be a good thing.
Yes, right? Yes.
So we have that. And then it sounds like what you're saying is that one of the, I mean, approach is always important here, but specifically high ball hitters who are going to be able to, you know, add spin in and stop balls faster on greens are going to be very firm and very fast. Is that correct?
I had read that a good leaderboard to look at would have been a similar type forecast that didn't have any rain that week was 2021.
Okay.
Hideki Matsuyama won that year at 10 under par. Will Zalatoris, Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth, and John Rahm all in the top five. So I see a lot of really good iron players there in that group of guys.
Let me tell you, Jackson and I sat at that table this morning, and we were drinking our instant coffee that I regretted almost immediately. I'm going to need to go out and replace that as soon as I can. And I looked at him, I said, does it feel like a Xander year? It kind of feels
we can get into it. Feels like I got, hey.
You got lots of cards. Here's what we're going to do first is we shout out to you, the viewer, the listener, the people that make this whole engine go. We were nothing without your support. And specifically shout out to George Goggins. He's an Auburn student studying sports analytics.
I'll give him a War Eagle.
Give him a little War Eagle. A little shout out, it. You know.
That's all you're getting.
He's got a daughter who loves Abby.
I do enough body get us at home. You'll get a quick little War Eagle for me. That's it.
So George put together basically he calls it the blueprint of a Masters champion. So he studies sports analytics at Auburn, loves this type of stuff. He has seven keys that each winner.
How do I get that in college? Like, I would have loved to have
I know,
that
right?
The thing study sports things, analytics?
It's about as good as it gets.
Wake up in the morning. Let's go look at who won the World Series in 1912. Like, come on.
That's a class that I'd go to. That's a class I've not slept through. Although but largely I feel like I'd enjoy that. But still, not a math guy. But so George put this thing together that has seven sort of keys each winner since 2000 had, with just one exception, right? And so here are the categories. They started the year ranked inside the top 75 in the world, no WGR. Okay. They had at least one career start at Augusta prior to the current season. They had a previous career win on the PGA and or the DP World Tour. They played in the previous year's Masters. They made the cut at the previous year's Masters, although There is one exception to that. Do you want to guess who the exception is?
Say it again.
Only one player since 2000 missed the cut in the previous year and then went on to win the next year.
Missed the cut the previous year and went on to win the Masters the next year. This should be easy to come up with, but I'm going to let you give me the answer.
Patrick Reed.
Ah.
Guy who's an intriguing name this week. And then the sixth criteria, multiple top 10 finishes in the current season going into Masters week, having some form. And the last one is at least plus one strokes gain tee to green for the year going into Masters week.
Okay, so let's define that.
Okay.
So a lot of people think tee to green. They think driving and they think approach play. But tee to green includes also around the green. So I think that's something that is a misleading stat when they talk about tee to green. You're like, okay, just ball strikers. No. Around the green.
And as we've documented on the show with guys like Sepp Straka and the way he changes his wedge setup or the type of things, the lies you get around the greens here. Like you really have to have some creativity and some ability to hit some shots that are, I think another thing too is, we just put something out today talking about Akshay Bhatia with the upward pitch tee boxes. They're like little quirks at Augusta. Another one of them is they mow all the fairways, like they mow it into the green everywhere. So you really got to be creative and have some good feel around the green to score well here this week. So with that criteria that George has put together, The players that remain on his list that fit all those boxes are Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Bryson DeChambeau, Ludvig Åberg, Xander Schauffele, Tommy Fleetwood, Matt Fitzpatrick, Colin Morikawa, Patrick Reed, Minwoo Lee.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good bucket.
Did you say Cam Young?
I did not say Cam Young. So then here's my second list. These are ones I just identified. Who does that leave out and why did they get left out?
Why did Cam Young get left out there?
Cam Young got left out because he missed the cut last year. So Cam Young's got actually a really interesting profile here where he's had four starts of the Masters, missed two cuts, but he has two top tens in the years he didn't miss the cut.
All right, that might buck a trend right there with your whole list.
I think so. Because if you go and it's an outlier because if you go and you look at both those years for Cam, why did he miss the cut? Really bad putting weeks. And as we know, that's something he's worked on a ton. He's really improved on. So I think that's an outlier for me. I think another outlier is John Rahm. He was not inside the top 75 in the world to start the year. Well, we know that's because Liv was not getting any points for their top 10 finishes as they are this year. And this year he's had one top, one fifth, three thirds, and a win. Yeah. And now he's rocketed up to 30th in the world. Some other names that didn't make it. Justin Rose, below plus one strokes gained TD green this year. Robert McIntyre missed a cut last year. Chris Goddard up and Jacob Bridgman, no prior starts. And JJ Spahn, only one top 10 this year, which is his win this last week. So an interesting profile, though, there. Like, I think of that list, I just wanted to, we'll talk about individual players, but just, do you agree with that set of criteria? Like, does that seem to profile the right guy?
I think it's a good starting point. I think there's a total of about 20 guys that probably have a chance to win this week. That feels like the number. And I think you named a fair amount of guys. I would probably add a couple more to the list of players who I think can win. But yeah, I think it's setting up for really, just an incredible leaderboard. But the one vibe that I have from this Masters is that it feels a little bit more open compared to years past and other Masters. It feels like we've had dominant players coming into the Masters over the last couple of years, with Scottie Scheffler winning multiple times, Rory McIlroy winning a couple times. And then there's been times where John Rahm has had great West Coast coming in here in 2023. This year, I don't feel that way. Scottie's been good. He hasn't been elite like we've seen. Rory McIlroy, back injury, hasn't won yet this season on the PGA Tour. We've had young guys winning on the PGA Tour. Nobody been able to keep leads, but we've had Cam Young kind of breakout, Fitzpatrick bit of a breakout. Ludvig Åberg's played really well, who's had really good Masters. So it's a interesting lead up into this Masters. So I think that there's a possibility for a first timer to win, a Chris Goddard, but Jacob Bridgman, but then also guys like Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth who've won this at this place. And with the firm and fast Masters, it feels like it caters into just precision iron play and really good stuff around the green. So I don't know where you want to start with this whole list of guys, but I think the conversation should be very open about who, like, of course, Scotty's going to be the favorite, and rightfully so. But I think a lot of players deserve a conversation about their chance to win.
I agree completely. I think more so than, golly, maybe any major that we've covered since we started this show, this is the one where, you know, as we kind of talk through it and Jax and I are prepping, it's like, I don't really have a good short list this year.
I don't have a pick as we sit here. Like, when we do our picks later in the show, I'm just going to vibe it out.
So I think it's interesting. If you look at the board right now, that there are 9 players that have odds of 30-1 or shorter to win outright. And they actually segment out into 2 perfect little groups. And so the first one is kind of your big 4. So let's just start at the top of the board, Smiley, with the favorite to win the tournament. Scottie Scheffler is going off a 4-1. He has made 6 starts here. He's won twice, of course, in 2022 and 2024. His last start was a tie for 22nd at the Players. He was supposed to play at the Houston Open, but he had to withdraw because he and Meredith, of course, welcomed their second son, Remy. Might have to poke around and see if there's any newborn stuff in the merch shop for little Remy this year. But his last 3 starts, ball striking just not up to the usual Scotty standards. And so I'm just curious what you're, if we're doing like a 1 to 10 confidence meter for Scotty Scheffler this week, where are you kind of landing for him?
I still feel very good about Scotty this week. It's probably in the 8 range.
Okay.
I'm not quite at the 9 and 10, which I would normally be at for Scotty. Mm-hmm. But I think when you look at Scotty Scheffler this season and you look at all of his statistics, you'll notice that the approach stats are down. Like, he's currently strokes gained this season 82nd approach. I mean, this is a guy who's lived in the top 3 over the last 3 years in strokes gained approach. It's been his bit of his superpower. But the other thing that we've kind of noted, if you've watched previous shows with Scotty coming off this entire West Coast swing and the Florida swing, is that he's been going back and forth between drivers a little bit.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to look at is, it's an interesting stat. It's fairway proximity from the middle. And this was interesting to me. So in 2024, he was first in that category, 18 feet. So it's basically talking about how wide your range is, right? And
right.
Over the last 2 years, it grew to 23 feet last year, which was still 23rd, which is still very, very good. Remember, this is a very long player. And then this year, it's grown to 30 feet, which is 97th. So we've kind of seen a trend of his misses being a little bit wider, his iron game being not quite as sharp. And how does that transfer to Augusta National, right? So you got a little bit of room off the tee, but if you do hit some wild or a little bit more wild shots, you think about some specific shots like the first hole. If you miss left there, you're looking at bogeys, left at 2. And typically for Scotty, he's missing it left off the tee. But I've been seeing also a right miss that happened at the Players' Championship where on Thursday, he hit all of his drives to the right. I'm like, man, this is weird. So,
and that's new driver, correct? That's not the old model that he won majors with?
I don't even know. I lost track of which drivers he was going back and forth at the towards the end there. But then you also throw in just the first round scoring average, which he's led that statistic over the last couple of years of the best scoring average on Thursdays. But this year he was averaging 70.67, which is 96th. Now I will say, in the rounds 2, 3, and 4, he's in the top 10 in scoring average. We've seen him, and I'm having a chance to win some of these golf tournaments. But overall, I think it comes down to, for Scotty, which is tightening up those driver misses, getting a little bit better with his wedge play, because I think he's been a little bit off in hitting his numbers this year, way off at times. I'm like, man, I've never seen Scotty miss his numbers like this so often. So just getting a little bit better in hitting his numbers, but then leaning into what makes him great, which is the most underrated skill that he has, which is his chipping ability around Augusta National, his ability to get up and down. And you go back and look at some of the years that he is really played well at this golf course. He won here in 2022 and 2024. And in those years, he had gained in 2024, 8 strokes around the green. And then also in 2022, he gained 5.7 around the green. So you give that with also a good driving week or a good iron week. And then throw in here, the last little bit I'll give you here is that his putting is, he's 17th strokes gained putting this year on the PGA Tour. He's leading in birdie average. He's still hitting a lot of greens. He's just not hitting it quite as close, and he's not hitting quite as many fairways. But I still think that all the things I just told you aren't that bad. Like, these are all like really, really positive things. If you looked at it for anybody else, we just hold Scottie Scheffler to such high standards.
I think it's, yeah, like it's he's still playing really good golf relative to the rest of the world. We're just so used to seeing this, you know, as close to Tiger Woods as anyone's been since the Tiger era.
It's just weird, man. Like, 3 straight weeks without a top 10 coming into it.
Well, I also think too that when you talk about, you know, the experience being a differentiator at Augusta, all the around the green stuff becomes all that more important, because a lot of the courses they're playing early in the year, and he's had some rough around the green weeks. I mean, he struggled a little bit at Phoenix. I think there's one other start where he had
it was weird, right?
It was just weird stuff like that. But also, like, those courses, I mean, there's obviously a level of difficulty, but in general, everything that you've played prior to this tournament is going to be a little more straightforward around the green for the most part than Augusta National.
I mean, this is expert level, right?
It's expert level.
And like you said earlier, everything's mowed back into the grain. So what does that mean? You need somebody who's confident in their ability to strike the golf ball and not worry about contact. Scotty's not worried about contact because of his steepness of his pitching. It's very similar to Jordan. They drive chips. They're not hitting up on chips. They're not trying to get height with being shallow. These guys are driving it into the ground. And there's a reason why those two have been so good around this place pitching.
Oh, yeah. By the way, this is another total aside, but dude, Sepp totally sold me on more bounce.
Yeah.
I'm going to 10 or 12 on everything.
Love it.
Like, all in on it. So anyway. All right, SK, next guy on the list, John Rahm, going off at 9-1. He's made 9 starts here in his career. He's won the one time in 2023. This year on LIV, we have two incredible form guys on LIV this year, John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. He has a win, 3 runner-ups, and a 5th place finish in 5 starts. And by virtue of that, and by virtue of the top 10 finishers in those events, mm-hmm. now getting OWGR points, he shot up to 30th in the world. So is this feels like, now I know he played good, golly, back at the Open in 2024, where he finished 7th place. Mm-hmm. He also played good last year at Quail Hollow for the PGA Championship. And so we need to give him a little more credit than maybe we do in the major context. But the large narrative since he left for LIV is that he's underperformed in majors relative to the stature of his game, what we expect from him. Does this feel like a real good opportunity to come in and change that this week for John Rahm?
I think so. I really do. He's played 8 major championships since going to LIV. He has not had a top 5 since he's gone in any major championship, which is shocking mm-hmm. for a player of his caliber. When you look at his results the last 2 years of the major, or at least at the Masters, last year he finished 14th, and you go look, you kind of dive into the data a little bit, really struggled with his iron play. And so that was one of the big reasons why he had a poor week. And then the year prior to that, I actually remember being on the call for this and noticing, it was like, man, I've never seen John Rahm putt this bad. He finished 45th. His iron game was okay, but the putting was just all over the place. So in the last 2 years, it's been really just below par in one part of his game. And typically for John Rahm, he's, you know, above average to very good across the board. You know, he's just such a consistent player. And in 2023, what he won, so we might as well go back to the year prior. He went to LIV Golf, and he had won so many events heading into the Masters. He was obviously talked about as going to be the next Spaniard to win. He had an incredible week with the irons, and so it kind of keeps reformatting my brain of what's important around this place, what really will eventually become of the next Masters champion this year. And I always keep going back to, gosh, you got to be a dang good iron player.
Yeah, I mean, especially, again, the conditions we talked about to open the show, especially this week.
Yeah.
You know, the firmness, the way that these greens are going to receive balls. I mean, obviously, that's going to add a layer of difficulty in terms of putting, but, you know, to give yourself looks, you're really going to have to be precise. You're going to have to, you know, think about the way you're landing it. It makes approaches on par fives. I mean, I guess to a certain degree, the stuff you noted on wind, maybe you have less club into par fives, but still, you know, holding the 13th or 15th, I mean, that's going to be a not straightforward challenge. And so I think all, you know, iron play, that tee to green stab really zeroed in on that approach stat is absolutely a key this week, given the conditions we're seeing.
And I just still come back to that. I don't know if LIV Golf prepares you enough from a golf course standpoint and the challenges that you see at Augusta National and just how precise you have to be. Now, maybe John is trying to take a different mental approach this season on LIV Golf and try to narrow his focus, practice a little bit more hard, be a little bit more tougher on himself on golf courses that aren't going to be quite as difficult. That's why I think guys that have played on the PGA Tour this entire season, they've played, you know, Riviera, they've played Bay Hill when it's tough. You know, Valspar was so difficult. And then, of course, just, you know, some of the events that, well, I guess Houston wasn't that hard, but San Antonio was tough. There's just the level of difficulty is just a little bit higher on the PGA Tour. And not to say that you can't go play a LIV golf schedule and win a major championship, because that's not true. It's happened. Brooks has done it. But when you look
at
his
when you just go look at
his major results, and he hasn't had a top five yet, I think you'll continue to say that until he either wins another major championship or contends and comes close. I know he was very close to the PGA Championship. Mm-hmm. He kind of fell off late, which felt like a top five, but really just was kind of going for broke there at the end, trying to make a statement.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing about this year, is that if you're looking for, like, relative to your comments about course difficulty and how prepared, you know, in past years we've talked about, are they playing enough? Is the schedule, you know, so infrequent that they're kind of accumulating rust? They're both playing courses that aren't as difficult as the PGA Tour, but they're also just not playing as frequently.
Four rounds
has produced better winners on their tour this year. But I think that's the most interesting thing as we kind of head into the next player I have on my list. Rory is, like, if you're looking at Scotty and Rory, the last start they both made was at the Players.
Yeah.
Scotty, of course, had the layoff because of, you know, their second son arriving, but also, like, three starts before that weren't great. So you don't feel like he's really tuned up or informed the way he wants to be. You look at Rory, who was in excellent form. So let's just launch into Rory. 17 starts here, of course, wins for the first time last year. It just had a tie for a second at the Genesis, kind of made a run at Jacob Bridgman coming down the stretch, goes to Bay Hill, has to withdraw for the back injury. And then the Players, he shows up, you know, I think Wednesday, doesn't really do a ton of practice rounds, you know, makes the cut, finishes tied for 46th, but I think two things for Rory this week that are interesting. I'm curious to hear your perspective on it. Is, you know, a guy that we're still not sure the stats was back. He hasn't played since the Players, and there just has to be a level of responsibility or commitment for the previous year's champion, especially when it's someone like Rory, where he is such a favorite of the members, a favorite of the patrons, a guy that they wanted to win for so long. That's a lot to manage when you're also trying to go out and win the premier golf tournament of the year.
I have no idea how Rory's going to play. I really have no clue. His, you know, just he's had a lot going on, right? He's got injury that happened, like you mentioned, at Bay Hill. He's got this doc that you talked about. I feel like it's just been busy for him.
Yeah.
He's really relished being the Masters champion. Is he going to be in the right frame of mind to want to go out and win another green jacket? You would think as soon as he tees it up, the answer would be yes. But has he had enough starts this year? Has he had enough good reps in contention? He played well at Genesis, which is typically a good comp mm-hmm. for Augusta, but Genesis was rain-soaked this year. It was soft. Guys are having to control spin, so it's not exactly the same tests that we're going to see this week at the Masters. The one thing that I look back at last year and was surprised at when I looked at the stats was how well Rory McIlroy ironed it. I think when you go back and look at all of those Sunday highlights, mm-hmm. they were all iron shots. And I always questioned whether Rory was going to win the Masters, because I didn't know if he was going to be able to iron it consistent enough, especially with his wedges, to be able to win. You knew he was going to be able to drive it well enough. His putting has taken leaps and bounds. I consider him to be a top 10 putter in the world. He's been a very, very good pitcher of the golf ball, good creativity there, but you always wonder, it's like, man, is he ever have his iron game quite as good? You know, because his driver swing, how it transfers to his iron game, sometimes causes him to have either left misses or just not be able to hold fades. But last year, it was good.
It was very, very good. Obviously, the iconic shot he hits, he really calls it the best shot of his life on 15.
Gah.
I mean, it's about as good as it gets there. And then, you know, but prior to that, I mean, the mistake he made on 13 to make double was just with a wedge in his hand, something that should just be as simple as possible.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, look, I mean, a healthy Rory McIlroy should be right there near the top of our favorites, but it still comes down to the iron. Yeah,
it's the iron game for me. And honestly, just when you don't play a ton or as much, I actually go towards the putter first. I worry about the putter for Scotty and Rory the most. And both of these guys are great putters, but to me, when I've had time off, that's the thing that always feels like it takes a second to kind of get my feel and touch back. And even chipping around the green, the ball striking comes back quicker because you're moving, you know, your body's moving great. But it's the just the feel and the touch spots. And then this golf course obviously enhances that. You have to be so creative and have no doubts about anything that you see or feel.
And if those greens get crispy, man, I mean, some of those nervy putts, you get above the hole in the wrong spot, like, hey, that's you really got to be holding onto the wheel with both hands. The fourth player that's in that, like, that top section of favorites is, of course, Bryson DeChambeau, also going off at 11-1. He's made 9 starts here. His best finish was last year where he tied for 5th. But he was in that final group with Rory, really kind of fell off as we worked into the second 9 of Sunday. He's won his last 2 starts on LIV. And Smiley, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like when he's had chances at the Masters, especially in the past few years, the issue for him is the thing that we've talked about the entire show is we're talking about the irons, specifically distance control with his irons. And if you're sitting here and telling me that's going to be the key factor this week, do you worry about Bryson if he really needs to be precise with that?
Well, he's had decent iron years in the past year. Mm-hmm. Last year just was not good. Now, if that's something that he has fixed and he feels like he can hit his numbers better, I've seen him be able to do it. I saw him doing it at Pinehurst.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily quite as concerned about that. But the one thing to me that if you're looking at a positive deal for Bryson DeChambeau heading into this year is how well he pitched the ball last year. That was one of the main reasons why he was in contention, was how well he pitched it. And I think everybody will always look back at the quote that he had about just Augusta National and how it should be a par 68 for him because of his length. And I think over the years, he's matured and realized what this course really is. Yes, you can bomb it off the tee, but it's so much more than that. It requires strategy, precision, and be able to hit golf balls into very small sections of the green, knowing where to miss it, when to take your chances, when to just say par is a good score. And I think when you look back at the 5 years prior to last year where, you know, he had a decent shot, obviously heading into Sunday playing with Rory McIlroy in that final group, he had lost considerable amount of strokes around the greens 5 years in a row. Never even was close to being just average around the greens. So when you see that he had such a positive jump to not only just being just average, but one of the best in the field last year at pitching, you start to think, it's like, all right, if he has a good iron week and he's able to learn his lessons about where to miss it around Augusta National and know where to get up and down from, to me, Bryson DeChambeau quickly becomes one of the favorites this week because of his ability to mature and know where to miss it and know how to get up and down out here.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at his process. I mean, if we're talking about a week like this week and what's going to be required, all the precision, the science, I mean, should be a huge benefit to him. You know, understanding the, you know, I remember watching videos of green density and things like that. Yeah. His greens firm up where he's really, really precise on that. But to your point, that the feel of being able to succeed around the green here when it can be a huge differentiator. Yeah,
he's a good putter
great putter. So
good putter too. I like Bryson this week. I do.
So those are your kind of that top group. Then there's a second group of 5 players that are all between 15-1 and 30-1 that I think are really intriguing. And the first person we're going to start with there is Ludvig Åberg. He's going off at 17-1. He's made 2 starts here. Both of them were top 10s. His best finish was in 2024 when he finished 2nd. He has, this is an interesting stat, you go on Data Golf, they have true strokes gain, which is the average strokes gain relative to expectation of like all the players for their lifetime rounds at Augusta National. He has the highest true strokes gain of anyone in the field, including Scottie Scheffler here. Mm-hmm. His last 3 starts on tour have been a tie for 3rd, a tie for 5th, and a tie for 5th. But that, of course, doesn't really tell the whole story of how he ended up in those positions. And I just wonder how much scar tissue you feel like he has, really from the players, but even on a Sunday at Valero. I know the weather was bad, but loses the driver a little bit. And just, you know, do you feel like he clearly has the game to get around this place? And he's got a great caddy in Joe Scobbin, who's super experienced, that can kind of help, you know, direct him. And we've seen them do it twice to great success. But, you know, do you worry about just mental makeup and pressure spots of just not having done it before? what's it going to take to get you over the hump, even if he has all the tools to win this tournament?
Yes, he does have all the tools to win this tournament. I think Ludvig Åberg will be a Masters champion, whether it's this year, I don't know. I feel pretty good about it. I think Ludvig Åberg is probably a guy who I might end up taking to win this week. Tune into the rest of this episode. He's just such an elite driver of the golf ball. He hits it far. He's always going to be gaining off the tee, similar to a Cam Young. Their precision and their distance give them such a big advantage. Where I've noticed with Ludvig over this entire swing is that he's really struggled with soft greens. I think with firmer greens,
His
ability to hit it high, his par three play, I think is going to be exceptional this week. He's an elite iron player. Where Ludvig has kind of gotten off a little bit is when the conditions have gotten a little shaky, or if the greens have gotten a little windy. Now, you can go back to that Sunday where I think it is very, very difficult to try to close out a golf tournament at TPC Sawgrass. He made strategic, a little indecision on what he was trying to do at 11. I think he'll learn from just, okay, I've got to control my golf ball here. I don't have to play a perfect shot. I think he may have learned that in that situation. I don't look at Sunday Valero as any type of, just litmus test on whether he's going to play good here or not, because the two are not comparable whatsoever. I saw a lot of really good stuff from Ludvig. And when it comes to just this week and his ability to contend and win, I think it just comes down to is what have you learned about yourself at Augusta National and just even TPC Sawgrass and events that he's had chances. Mm-hmm. When you're standing in that 11th fairway and knowing that I can't take this shot on. I got to be aiming right here. I got to play more decisive. I have to play with a little bit better strategy. And if he learns those lessons and he hits it to those right places – And his swing doesn't let him down, because sometimes technique has let him down with pressure, and you still have to wonder, is that going to be something that we have to monitor? If he hits it in the water on 12 with the lead and just knowing, can he hit those shots coming down the stretch? That's a question mark we're going to have to answer, but I think he's fully capable of doing it.
Undoubtedly. I mean, I think that to me is the question of like just armchair psychology right here, right? If you watch Ludvig Åberg play golf, The best version of him is the one that's a little more carefree, light, laughing, good disposition, making jokes with Skovran and his playing partners. And to me, it seems like what that enables is he's got the cleanest, simplest set of mechanics in the game of mm-hmm. golf. And so when you're thinking about little to nothing other than just your whatever your key swing thoughts are and you're letting it flow, when you have that frame, that athleticism, that strength and power, it should be very easy for you to shoot low scores. But then like the player situation where he has two tee balls in a row where he hits it off the toe and hard hook. Like if you're looking at a guy that has those easily repeatable, clean mechanics and those are the misses, I think that brings into play what you're talking about, where it's, does pressure change, the way he's going about making his golf swing? And nowhere more pressure packed than a place like Augusta National. But I do think your point about green firmness, that's a really good one. And obviously he has success around here. And it's just what position does he need to be in? Like it almost feels like to me, if he's going to win this thing, he's better suited chasing than being in the lead. Like having someone who's out in the lead and being a few strokes behind and making a charge on Sunday, then, again, resting on a lead, sleeping on a lead and going out there and thinking about it for a period of time.
I think he would take a lead if you're going to give it to him. I think he would take the lead.
No one's going to turn it down. I just think about the composition, the flow of some of these rounds. So it'll be interesting. But obviously a guy that
I would be
like
shocked.
A lot of people like this
I would
week.
Be shocked if he wasn't having a chance on Sunday on the back nine.
I think you could just book him for a top five right now. Yeah. I'd be shocked if he didn't.
He might, gosh, him in a green jacket, come on.
Oh, look fantastic. I wonder what his size is. We're like a 46 long, maybe?
46 long, stop it. He could dunk standing up, 46 long.
I'm not a jacket sizing guy, so there you go. Yeah, this is a Ralph Lauren guy over here. He knows all about that. So, next guy on the list. This guy, I love this guy this week. Xander Schauffele going off at 18-1. He's made 8 starts here. 5 of them were top 10s. 2 of them were top 5s. His best finish was a tie for 2nd in 2019, but he was also a factor at that 2021 Masters you referenced, the Hideki one, where he and Will Zalatoris were the main chasers. I believe it was a T3 that year. He's had top fives in his last two starts at the Players in Valspar. And this is a place, it's a happy hunting ground for Xander Schauffele. I mean, it feels like, you know, all last year the story was recovering from injury, working through some stuff, maybe with equipment, with putting that need to get ironed out. Now we're seeing a much better version of him this year, it looks like. You know, he missed that cut early on. It almost seemed like it kicked him into a new and different gear. And it looks, to me, it looks like the closest we've seen to the guy who won two majors in 2024.
Yeah, especially in those last two starts, right? You know, he finished T3 and T4 coming off of Valspar in the Players' Championship. A bit of a backdoor one, it felt like, yeah, at the Players. And gosh, he the guy's a backdoor king, you know, when it comes to top fives and top tens. So you'd like to see him be a bit of more of a front runner to see if he'll actually kind of contend here. I know there are plenty of statistics that go around with the Masters of eventual champions on where they sit on the leaderboard after round one, after round two. This isn't a place that you feel like you can just get off to a slow start and eventually win at this golf tournament. Mm-hmm. You really need to be on your front foot right from the go, and not have off days. And that'd be my only concern with Xander. Is he going to have an off day in this championship? And when I look at just his starts over the last 3 years here at the Masters, he's ironed it very good. I think the putter last year was a bit of a struggle. And actually what surprised me a little bit, because I've always considered Xander to be an elite putter, is that he's never really putted it exceptional at the Masters. Hmm. He's putted it good. He's not putted it bad. He's never putted it great. Now, I think Xander is a very smart player. I think him and Austin Kizer always develop a great game plan. They're always going to be prepared, which is why you see him always near the top of the leaderboard. Yeah. But I think for Xander and just where his form has been, I think just let's see how he gets started off on Thursday. I think that'll tell you a lot about where his game is going to be this week. If he's in that top four, top five on the leaderboard after Thursday, I think you'll see him hang there the entire week.
Next guy is an intriguing proposition. We talked a little bit about Cameron Young, missed the cut last year. He's going off at 24-1. But again, four starts here, two missed cuts, two top tens, and the missed cuts were both bad putting performances, something he's had a ton of improvement on. His best finish is a tie for seventh in 2023. Cam's last three starts, tied for seventh at Genesis, a place that, as you mentioned, profiles well for Augusta National. A tie for third at the API and a win at the Players. He likes to work the ball right to left. This is a drawer's paradise. I mean, could this be a trend buck here, where this is that he goes out and gets his first major win on the back of, you know, for years the narrative around Cam was, is he ever going to win a PGA Tour event? Is he ever going to get it done? Well, goes out and wins the Wyndham, plays amazing at the Ryder Cup at Bethpage, goes out and wins the Tour's premier event, the Players. Feels like all that's well in the rearview mirror for Cameron Young.
I think so. With Cam, I have no doubts about his abilities heading into this week. His driving, similar to Ludwig, it's just on a different level. You know, his accuracy with his length will just dominate so much of the field that you're just like, God, he's playing from there. He has this club into this par five. But his putting has been so good. And so his driving and his putting are two just superpowers heading into the week. Where I question if Cam Young doesn't win this week or doesn't contend, I think it'll be because of his either his iron play or just around the green. And what I mean by that is, can Cam get out of playing kind of range shots? Can he get into playing shots out here at Augusta National? He's arguably one of the, like, if you put this guy on the range and you sit in here and watch him at seven irons, you watch him at wedges, you're like, how could this guy ever not win at Augusta or not win every week he tees it up? I think you just there's creativity that's required at Augusta National to win, to be able to work it both ways, hit certain shots. And when you saw him really turn the corner on Sunday at the Players' Championship, it was because he started hitting golf shots. So I want to see Cam Young do that this week. There's no doubt that his stock stuff is good enough. And maybe it is with a wind that is a little bit less this week, that maybe that it makes him feel like he can still play creatively, but just not have to worry quite as much about maybe just where these gusts are coming from. So I feel great about Cam this week. He could be a Masters champion at the end. And man, God, what a start to the season it would be if he's able to get that green jacket on.
Well, and I was curious specifically, you know, about the you mentioned the wind, green firmness, And I wonder how you think that's going to impact decisions that he makes alongside his caddy, which it was such an amazing partnership coming down the stretch there at the Players. But if the difference of the Players for you was not hitting wedges full, right? Like taking advantage of distance by hitting a wedge a little bit softer, maybe flighting a little bit, controlling spin that way. How do you think this week's conditions play into the way he's going to strategize with wedges? You know what I mean? Cause could you, if it's firmer, could you hit him fuller knowing you could spin it back a little bit?
It would be helpful to be able to hit wedges high to be able to, because you're not quite as concerned about balls just like sucking back, right?
Right.
So he's not going to be quite as concerned about that, which I think plays to his favor. I think when you know, 138-yard gap wedge is 138-yard gap wedge, that's better for him.
Yes.
But I still think you're going to have to teeter the ball left or right at times. So just being able to play with a little bit of feel when it's required, I think he's going to have some element of that to win this golf tournament.
Next on our list, we got two more in this section. Tommy Fleetwood, 25-1, made 9 starts here, only 1 top 10. His best finish was tied for 3rd in 2024. He's had 4 top 10s in his 5 PGA Tour starts this year. Why do you think Tommy hadn't played better here? I mean, that's not a terrible record, but just because it seems to be such a perfect fit for him, and you'd expected maybe a record that does look closer to like Xander's or something like that, and he just never really has had a series of strong finishes at a place that seems like as a great iron player should suit him very well.
Yeah, I think the fact that we always keep considering Tommy Fleetwood to be just like the best iron player of all time is something.
The stats don't reflect it.
They don't reflect it quite as much. And so I want to just do a quick little bit of homework here on Tommy in his career here. He's had like 1 or 2 pop weeks with the irons, but the other weeks have been below average to just average. I also see that he's a very underrated pitcher of the golf ball. His scrambling stats are something that always surprised me of how good he is around the greens. So that's something that's very good for him. He's a very accurate driver of the ball. Not necessarily the longest, but he's definitely picked up some speed. He's a mid-170s ball speed guy where I would have said, a couple of years ago, he was probably living in high 160s, low 170s. Mm. So that's an added benefit. Maybe a club or two less into some of these greens, which apex height will be important. I think this drier weather benefits him, that the golf ball's moving, going a little further. And like you said, he is a very good iron player. Does it mean he's the best of all time? No. But I also think that when he gets that pattern going, it feels like he'll never hit a bad shot. And I think when Tommy gets locked in that, it could be his, the reason why he wins this week. But the one thing that you can look at this season of, okay, why hasn't he either won or contended a little bit more? He's played good. He hasn't really putted that great.
Yeah.
He just made a putting change. Nothing mechanically, just a different visual at the top of his putter. Instead of a line that
kind of like a funky sight line,
instead of a
right?
top I've never line, seen an A it, like it works that. Works perpendicular. So something that just gives him a different look. We'll see how that translates into a little bit maybe more creativity. When guys have that top line, sometimes they're trying to get it perfect on their line. When you just have a dot and you're not lining your golf ball up, it requires you to really just have to visually see the line. It's kind of similar to what Jacob Bridgman talks about, how he sees his lines with his putting, which is great at Augusta.
So the last player in this group, arguably in the best form of anyone entering the tournament this week, Matt Fitzpatrick going off 25-1. He's made 11 starts here, 2 top 10s. His best finish was a tie for 7th in 2016. Last 2 starts, of course, 2nd at the Players where he took Cameron Young to the wire. Then he wins at Valspar. He's another guy that his Masters record isn't like sparkling, but he's played here 11 times. He has a lot of experience. What do you like for Fitz this week?
Well, I think when you go back to last season, when he had hired Mark Blackburn after Augusta, it feels like his entire
we're doing it.
it feels like his entire golf game just completely evolved. He had struggled so much with his iron play, his precision, because he had gained so much speed. It just had gotten too much. But since he had made that call to Mark Blackburn, he's had 12 top 10s, 2 wins, and a runner up at the Players, and has not yet to win a major championship since he called, but he was in contention with the PGA in that first major back since working with Blackburn. What I've seen from Fitzy is that he is arguably one of the most accurate players in the game right now. His ability to hit his line off the tee, and he's got this really low driver that I love. He fights it down. Yeah. It's just a bullet. It's no cut, straight, no fall. It doesn't do one thing or another. It's just dead straight. He's fourth in accuracy, so he's a player that is going to be playing from the fairway the entire week, just especially with, you know, Magusta not being the most difficult off the tee. You got a little bit of room. So with his length, his accuracy, and then his iron game that is greatly improved, especially his wedge play. But one stat I wanted to give you was that something that I like is that par fives are so important here, right? Mm-hmm. Like your second shots into these par fives are so important. His going for the green, hitting the green percentage is sixth on the PGA Tour this year. So times in which he's going for the green, he is the sixth best on tour and actually finding the green surface. So a lot of easy two-putt birdies. But where I'll point to where Fitzy might have struggles is, if you look at his stats, is that his putting, even in these weeks that he's played well, like Valspar, he putted very average and won. And Players' Championship putted very average and almost won. He's been very, very average. I think like 96 in putting this year. But one stat that really stuck out is that he's 137th in three putt avoidance, and that's a huge, huge statistic to look at this week. Is how good are you about getting the ball down in two when you get it on these complex greens? So, I think the putting is something you have to look at. But when you look at Fitzy, I'll leave you this: is that Fitzy's putting, when you go back over the last like six seasons, he's been inside the top 30 in putting like year after year after year. So we're not talking about a guy that has to like go like magically find good putting. He's a guy that already has it. He just needs to kind of figure it out a little bit this week.
Right. And the ball striking is, I mean, Valspar, like coming down the stretch, he kept hitting it close and could not buy one. And then finally gets one at the 18th to win the tournament. So it's like, if iron play is key this week and he's hitting it close enough, those two things make a ton of sense, where it's like, you got some tricky green complexes, make sure you get it down in two. Maybe you get a few putts, maybe the putting gets going, and then, you know, you're in contention.
Could he be the first cross-handed chipper to win at Augusta National?
How does cross-handed play into the grain?
Chipping?
Good.
Not for me.
For somebody. Then I have two, Smiley, that I have in the consider me intrigued category, okay? Justin Rose at 35-1 and Patrick Reed at 44-1. Justin Rose has three runner-ups here, including last year's playoff loss. He won Boat Race the Field at the Farmers, but then since then, two missed cuts and four starts. Most recent finish was tied for 13th at the Players. Would you need a little more recent form from Rosie to buy stock?
He's got the benefit of the doubt of more so than any player in the game right now. You just figure that he's going to be able to turn on his game when it matters the most. He's proven that over the last however many years, so no doubt.
Okay, and then P. Reed, 2018 champion, of course. He started this year, he won, finished second, and then a one on the DP World Tour. But he's only played twice since that second win that was in early February. His most recent finish was tied for 10th at the Joburg Open about a month ago. And it's funny because this is the conversation we were having about Patrick Reed and others when they played on LIV. Now he's playing on the DP World Tour, and it's a similar thing. It's like, we know how good he started the season. We know he plays great here, but do you need to see a little more recent form from him? You like P. Reed this week?
I do. I do like P. Reed.
Love it.
He's in that category with Jordan and Scotty as far as his ability to pitch it around this place, leave it in the right spots. It's all going to come down to, can he just be above average ball striking? If he has a pop iron week, Patrick Reed very well could be back in a green jacket.
I'm intrigued. Color me intrigued for Patrick Reed this week. It's time, Smiley. Time to make our one and done picks. I believe it's my pick first this week. And this is a really weird place because I feel like the game we've been playing the past couple of years is who gets to the Players or the Masters first, and so they can take Scottie Scheffler on that spot. That's been the formula for both of us. But I'm not going there this week. And I just think I just have a Xander feeling this week. I just really feel like, and especially too, I mean, we're playing this game informally amongst ourselves and kind of a fun competition, so it's a different feel. But if you're in a one-and-done game with a bunch of other friends, I think a lot of people are going to go Ludwig, a lot of people are going to go Scotty, Xander might be a nice little look for a little bit less traffic on him. So I'm taking Xander this week.
Okay. I definitely don't mind that. Like I said earlier, I think it just all depends on what type of start he gets off to. And then I'll give you a pretty good indication how he plays this week. I think before I give my pick, I think just a couple other notes for some guys who I think.
Yeah, please.
I'm really intrigued by Jordan and JT this week.
Mm-hmm. You
know, obviously two of my buddies. But I think both guys have shown that their iron game's been good enough to be – to be, you know, contending. Players Championship, I loved what I saw from JT's putting. So that was the one really thing that I think JT hasn't done a great job of here. He hasn't really had really good putting weeks. Like, he struggled putting around this place. I'm not sure if it's just been, you know, thinking about or wanting it too much. So good to see that he putted well at the Players. Obviously, his iron game could be good enough. Can he tighten up the driver? That's one interesting part.
Yeah.
Jordan's putting at Valero was a concern. A big concern. He lost 8 strokes gained putting. He was the worst putter in the field. But his iron game and his ball striking has been so good, and he's such a good pitcher. I'm so interested to see how he plays this week. Because if he finds something in the putting and he gets on these quick greens that have more slope to them that last year, or Valero last week, soft greens, slow,
rained all week,
cross grain. You're playing wind on slow greens, where this week it'll be fast, like heavily breaking greens. Like, that's much more of his speed. If the putter is better inside of 8 feet, I think he might have a chance of contending just based off how he's hit the golf ball. I'm not going to pick him this week. I'm probably going to end up taking... I took Ludwig at the beginning of the year.
Oh, that's right. We gave him back to you. No, you didn't take Ludwig.
No, at the beginning of the year as far as our major championship
predictions. Right. Yes.
And I kind of just want to go with that. But also I kind of want to just say my strategy has been to take live golfers at these events because you just don't get to use them at
our
other signature events. And it's kind of burned me on other years where I feel like I've liked PGA Tour guys coming in. I figured I was going to take either Ludwig, Cam, or Fitzy. We're going to be one of the three. And I don't think I have a good answer. Have I taken any of those three guys yet?
You have taken
Ludwig, Cameron,
none of those guys. They're all available.
I think
what a welcome change.
Instead
of taking Sam Burns three times in a season.
I think based on everything I've just told you, I think Cam Young has got to be the right play here. Although Ludwig was the one I felt like I wanted to play because I like Cam also at Aronimink is who I picked with him at the beginning of the season.
Yeah,
the majors. Maybe I screwed up there, but I'm going to lean on the PGA Tour of the three best players who I feel like are coming into it. Crazy. I know. I thought I would have taken Scotty in this position, but
same.
I just think that Cam's playing so good. He's putting it good. He's driving it good. I just need to see a good iron week from him.
Well, I think this speaks to, like, I think this is going to be a really, really fun week and a really wide open Masters and really entertaining because I just think there's so many different people that are worth following given how all those storylines could end up in a win. So I can't wait to get out there.
Yeah, the two only other names we didn't talk about that I think is worth just a quick discussion is you got some two first timers showing up here who have a chance to win. I think
got her up in Bridgman, right?
Jacob Bridgman is one of the best putters in the world. Yeah. His iron game has been exceptional. Is his driving going to be a problem? Like, is that going to be something we run into? Because it's going to be a lot of drivers.
Yep.
It's not, you know, some dink course like Valspar where you can just kind of squeeze stuff out there. You got to send it. And Chris Goddard, guess what he can do? He can send it. These two guys, by the way, they're going to be an exceptional team together.
They'd be one of the best President's Cup pairings to watch.
Sneds need to just go ahead and just put Bridgman and Goddard together. They're already buddies. I think their games match up so well together. But Goddard, I think I had a couple notes on him here.
Yeah.
He's got two wins coming in to this Masters, 5 top 20s. He's one of only two other players since I think it was like 1980, which this shocked me. I thought he was going to be the only player that has 4 wins before teeing it up in his first ever Masters. There's actually two other players that have done it. I wish I had the two players because I got this stat from Harrison Root, our NBC stats guy. I was like, gosh, I thought this was going to be a no-brainer that 4 wins, like, surely.
Surely he's played at some point, yeah.
You know, one of them was, I'm thinking of his name. Mark Wilson was one of them. And then another guy, I can't remember his name. But what I like about Goddard, obviously he's driving.
Yeah.
He's top 10 in 3-putt avoidance. His short irons have been very good. And he's been very, very good in that 10 to 15 foot range. And heading into the season, I asked him, like, hey, Goddard, what are you working on? He's like, I've been working really hard on that 10 to 15 foot range. And, you, and you see it in the stats. You're going to have those looks here at Augusta. So interested to see how Goddard plays, because he could be the first-time winner since we've seen since Fuzzy Zauer.
Well, and Bridgman, when we had him on the show talking about, I mean, this is kind of his backyard. I mean, this is the type of golf he's used to playing. I believe he said he came here the first time, made 17 pars on one bogey, and the second time he saw it, he lit it up and shot a good score. So, I mean, I think there's, even though he's a first timer, there has to be more of a comfort level for Bridgman this week that that most first timers would not have. So I'm highly intrigued by both those guys.
All right, let me ask you these two guys, because I feel like I've done a lot of talking. Is Akshay Bhatia and Minwoo Lee?
Yeah, we were talking. Jackson and I were talking about this before the preview, and just saying that Akshay going to play in India, understanding why he did it, it's one of his sponsors, and that course is like, that DLF course is nuts, like it's insane. So it's not an actual predictor or barometer of success at Augusta, but it's just, when that's the last time you see him out, it just gives you a little bit of pause. Yeah, but I think that I mean, the way he's playing right now, to win it at Bay Hill on a greens that were super crusty, obviously different type of surface, but like, you know, he stood up to a challenge and putted it very well. And so if you get conditions like that this week, you know, we know that he can putt under pressure, and that's going to be key. And the ball strike has been there. I worry a little bit about, you know, of the categories we talked about, the stuff off the tee. If he gets a little wayward off the tee and gets some tough spots, it's kind of hard to recover from that, but definitely a guy that, if we're kind of going down the list and suggesting guys, you're definitely circling him, underlining him.
His iron game and his putting game
is so good. Yeah. And then what was the other one you said? Minwoo Lee. Man, I remember the first time we did the show here together, and I spent a couple days walking around with, maybe it was Friday or Saturday, with Minwoo Lee and Joaquin Neiman. It was just so fun watching.
How about Joaquin not even being here?
It's insane. It's just, you know, and you know, they
just missed the OWGR,
like, and there are ways to play your way in now if you play good on live, you know. And so it's a shame for him. It's like, imagine
Van Pooge, man.
Imagine if they had the top 10 live points last year, and he would have racked up all those points for winning five times. Yeah. He would have absolutely made it in the Masters. Yeah. But Minwoo is he's putting it really well this season.
Yes,
he's got that new putter that he's rolling it well, so that's a good thing. I think for him, it's the same sort of thing. It's like, you know, he moves it off the tee, but it's like, are you hitting it straight? Are you putting yourself in good positions? And then is there like a level of, can you elevate the iron play and then keep between the lines around the green? That for me is like the question for him. But he's on that list of guys that he checks all the boxes.
It would be the chipping and the iron game for Minwoo. And then, gosh, I have this weird feeling that it's no doubt going to happen. One of the Højgaard brothers is going to play good.
100%. Right? 100%. And it's
been, you have no idea which one.
Well, and it's been more Nico's year, right? This year, right?
I don't know. But it's a good question. Rasmus is playing good too.
But I'm trending Rasmus. How about that? Well, sideshow bet. You get Nico, I get Rasmus, and I don't know. Loser has to wear a Danish flag on the show or something.
And then a guy like McIntyre too, man. He's another player. Like, you just keep on coming up with more and more guys that you're like, gosh, they feel like they have a chance. I mean,
it's going to be great for that this year.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys that have really elevated their games, and you know, it's a 72 hole test that just wears you out mentally and physically, and we'll see who can answer the test. But I think God, Brooks Koepka. Gosh.
I know.
What about Brooks, man? Like,
and Brooks. Brooks is like, oddsmakers like him a lot this week. He's like 37-1.
He's leading the tour in approach.
I mean, gotta hit the irons good this week. We could do a 4-hour show on all the people that we like this week, really and truly.
Gosh, there's just, you know, for all those people that are, you know, building their lineups and stuff, man, like, I think there's just, the options are endless. And hopefully we didn't confuse you in all this, because I tried to give you positives and negatives along the way. I think the positives with Brooks and his putting and his iron game would be great. Gosh, he drove it terrible, like, leading into this. And you're like, can he drive it better? Right. And so that would be the concern there. I can't even believe it got this long, didn't even get into Brooks. So it's wild.
But I think it speaks to, like, why this is such a great test. You know, we're talking about, iron plays a difference here, but it's like, can you be accurate enough off the tee to take advantage of the iron game?
Yeah.
And then, and if you're trying to lay it up on certain par fives, you got to hit your approach wedges really good, you know. And then if you miss greens, you got to be able to kind of, you know, really work through the hitting into the grain. It's just, there's just, it's the tournament that's the top of the list every year for
as,
a reason.
As we're trying to finish this episode, I keep on giving one more thing. Can you give me your big sleeper?
Big sleeper. All right. Okay.
I'll give you mine while you look at
it. Okay.
I really like Jason Day this week.
Love Jason Day.
He contended last year. This place is tailor-made for him, man. He's such a good pitcher. When you go watch him in person to play, he surprises you how high he hits his irons. And he's played well at Augusta. And especially at this point in his career, you think like, man, I can't believe Jason Day hasn't won here. You know, he's so close to winning here.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in that pop years in like 2015, man, where you just felt like he was undoubtedly the best player in the world. And this place is tailor-made for him. It just fits his game. I think other players would agree with me is that he would be a guy, especially as he gets kind of later in the years, you know, the Sergio when he was kind of getting in this mid-tier age. Like Jason Day is the type of player that can be one of the older players to win here.
I'm also very intrigued to see what they allow him to wear this week. I saw him in like a head-to-toe, like, bird rain suit.
I can't wait.
Like,
he's going to
– imagine
Jason Day coming out of the locker room, making the walk down to the 18th green for the crowning, and he switches to, like, a sweatsuit.
Just a cashmere sweatsuit. They're like, sir, do you make that that green jacket in cashmere? Like a cardigan?
A light blue sweatpants, light blue hoodie, you know, with the, you know, just the drawstrings on both.
Oh,
come on.
So I don't know if mine necessarily qualifies. He's sleeper-ish. We haven't talked about him yet, so I think there's something with her. Jake Knapp. I think here's a guy who he's putting it so good this year and likes to kind of turn the ball right to left. I think he's like 10th in the FedEx Cup standings. Like he's had a good resume of work throughout, like consistent in form, long, right? And so I think it really just comes down to
the driver putter's good, man.
Driver putter's good. Just how's his iron play look this week? And if he misses some greens, you know, what's his short game look like? But Jake, like if those two things are in place, I'm not worried about the driver. I'm not worried about the putter.
I'm surprised that stuff. He probably would have clicked a lot of those. Trend stats or whatever. He's definitely going to be
didn't play your last year.
Yeah, he
missed out last year.
He has the best scoring average on the PGA Tour, actual, and then he also has the best scoring average adjusted. So when we talk about adjusted, that's how, you know, like a rated golf course, like how difficult the course is and what you shot. He is the best in both. So technically, he has been the best informed player. So gosh. We just went a full episode, talked 20 plus names, and didn't even get to Jake Knapp. So yeah, I'm going to give you that as a sleeper category.
Yes, good.
So what shocked me when I was digging into his stuff is that he from 10 to 15 feet and 15 to 20 feet, he has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's been like 30 to 40%. So when you talk about like the best 3-point shooters and what their statistics are, like Knappel for the Hornets this year, what he's averaging, like 45% from three.
Look at basketball SK over here.
Knapp is like he's doing similar type numbers, like Jordan Spieth type numbers from that mid-tier range. So you're gonna have a lot of those looks this week if he stays hot there with the putter. And I definitely agree with you. I don't know if the iron game is gonna be good enough. But the length is definitely gonna be such an advantage for him.
But kind of working back into that point. If, you know, let's say he misses greens, you know, let's say the iron play's not all the way on and you're wedging up there as best you can, but you're still leaving yourself 10 to 15 feet. The putter's hot and you're saving pars or you're hitting greens, you're making birdies. That's a great formula.
Yeah, I worry about Masters experience. You know, I think he'll be much more prepared this go around than he was 2 years ago. But I think there's so much to learn about this place. And has he learned enough?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll find out. Golly, and you could like one more me like five more times. We still haven't talked to everyone.
I don't like this week. I have to pee. So
I don't know if Jack's picked this up, but my tummy's rumbling. I need some food right meow.
I might pick that up.
Okay. So that's all for our Masters preview episode. We hope you enjoyed all the insight. We're talking about some guys in this one. Go watch the Bones preview to get ready for the course. And then just stay tuned. We have a piece of content coming out every day this week in full length and also on socials. We're going to be covering the Masters start to finish. So stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe to YouTube. And we'll be right back here all week long, bringing you the latest updates from Augusta National. Happy Masters week.
We'll see you next week on the Golf Channel. This has been The Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first time fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the